Greetings and salutations, Place to Be Nation. I'm Tyler Kelly, and with me, as always, is my buddy Jambalaya Jake, Jacob Williams. And we are here to continue counting down our top 100 WCW matches ever. How are you doing, Jake?
I'm doing okay, Tyler. How about yourself?
Doing well. Doing well. Ready to get into these matches that are, you know, really the tippy-top matches here.
Yes, the cream of the crop, if you will. Yes.
Right. That is right, and we do have a big night. We've got several matches to talk about, a lot of classics, so why don't we get right into it? And mm-hmm. Jake, I believe it is your turn to start with your number 30 match.
Yeah, so I will bust the top off of this thing with my number 30, which is a very famous match. It will be the Nasty Boys versus Cactus Jack and Max Payne, Chicago Street Fight from Spring Stampede 1994, fantastic show, by the way. But yes, I adore this match. I think it is generally a blood match. You had it 34, Tyler, so we're only like a smidge away from each other, practically the same rating, just about. So I think the thing that I love most about this match and what really sets it apart, because there are a ton of, like we talked about early in our list, we had the Kevin Sullivan, Chris Benoit, that kind of crazy brawl. We've had a few crazy brawls throughout this, and there's obviously been quite a few throughout the history of WCW and NWA, what have you. But this one, I think, I don't know, maybe more, I would have to really sit there and think, but it's definitely up there as far as matches that I think that are effectively able to create, like, legit feeling chaos. Like, there's just such a feeling of chaos throughout this entire match. And it's not a super long match. It doesn't really drag on very long. And it's funny because it does get into certain points into the walking brawl stuff that I've kind of... I'm not usually a huge fan of. But just something away... The way they execute this match, it comes off as so legit. And one reason is because they're just beating the piss out of each other. Like, probably pretty legit. Like, just hitting each other with weapons and stuff, but it all looks so legit, and they do a really good job of this match. When they do a lot of the weapon shots, they like kind of make them sloppy and like real looking. Like at one point, they use like a chair. I think at the Nasty Boys hit Cactus. Shocker, he takes a fucking ass beating in this match. Like he just gets his shit pushed in throughout this entire match. But like at one point, they go to hit him with the chair, but instead of doing it in the normal like wrestling style where you kind of close the chair and like the guy's ready for it, he takes it. They just kind of hit him with like an open chair and like throw it at his head. So there's a lot of those type of shots in this match. I think that's what separates it. It just gives it this crazy manic energy throughout the entire match, like, which I think is why I love it so much. Like I said, I don't know of many matches off the top of my head that are so effectively captured that sense of chaos that this match does. Like, you know, like I was saying, the weapon shots don't look like your typical wrestling weapon shots. Like it's definitely far removed from what you would see in like the hardcore title stuff of like WWF or something like that. It's very, it all looks really legit. Like they use the table as a weapon, like an open table as a weapon, like just bludgeoning each other with it. And like the part where they go to do the table and they just get on top of the table and the table just breaks under their weight. It's just like, you never know what's going to happen next in this match. It's all just so nuts. And the finish too, I think, is just a crazy finish, because like you kind of don't expect it. And I think, again, that's why I love about this match, is that it could be, I guess, maybe a little anticlimactic in like a wrestling way, but it's so legit because they just get like a snow shovel. The Nasty Boys get the snow shovel. I think it's Knobs that gets it. And he just like slams it on Cactus's face on the side of the ramp, like throws it at him and just smacks his head on the ground. And like, that's the finish. It's just such like a blunt, like kind of out of nowhere finish, but it really does fit the match. Like the best way I could think of this, and it's a weird description, but like this match is almost like, it reminds me of like a 2 minute, like insane, like punk song in like a wrestling match. Like that's what this match reminds me of. And it's just, it's so awesome. It has such a unique energy about it. Like it's insane to me that Max Payne, who by all other account, like every other match he's ever had is like basically trash that I've seen. Like he kind of sucks, but this match he just is very good in. But really the Nasties and Cactus are like the stars of the show. I think Max Payne is okay. He doesn't hurt the match. But man, Cactus is just all over, taking crazy bumps. The Nasty Boys are here to fuck around too. Like, It's just fantastic. I love this match so much, Tyler.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, we were in lockstep on this one, like four spots apart. So, and we were very near where it finished with the voters. This finished as match number 27. So I think it was right around where we both had it. I like that Cactus is wearing a Super Dad t-shirt. So that was nice. And at first I thought the Nasties were attacking with kendo sticks until I realized it was actually pool cues. So to your point about just everything looking kind of real, it's rough, but looks very real. I think that's a good, you know, a good point to that, is they were using pool cues, and it was just complete chaos. Like you mentioned, they had a nice souvenir stand brawl, which reminded me of the old Tupelo concession stand brawls that Memphis used to run. I think every time they were in Tupelo, as far as I can tell. So, and I like Tony had a nice line when they were fucking around with the concession stand. He says, "I'm not even sure that t-shirt fits him." I don't know that there were many t-shirts that were going to fit anybody that was in this match, probably, but, you know, and I also like the table. You mentioned the table, and Cactus just suplexes the table onto, I think it was Sags. Like, yeah. He uses the table, you know, to do that, and, you know, and it was just great. And, you know, you mentioned the shovel, and Cactus just gets waffled with it and flies off the ramp, and then, like you mentioned, they throw the shovel at him, and the finish is when whichever one of the Nasty Boys just hits him while he's laying on the ground. So that was one of my thing that I had a little quibble with, because I thought it wasn't the best visual, but I thought, God, I bet it did hurt like hell. Like, I bet that hurt more than like the one he took for the bump. But that's just a small quibble, because it was just, there was constant rolling. It really kind of made it tough to take notes. But it was a great match because you couldn't stop, like, you know, just we're going. And I had this one, I think I watched this one on my CD because it was on Bully's first CD. So that's kind of the theme of a lot of the matches we have here. But yeah, I really enjoyed this match, and you know, really enjoyed the Cactus Chaotic Brawls. So, and in fact, speaking of Cactus Chaotic Brawls, yes, that brings me to my number 30, which is also a chaotic Cactus Jack brawl, and that is Vader versus Cactus Jack Texas Deathmatch from Halloween Havoc 1993. And I think last episode, Jake, you said something about there were other Cactus brawls, and you were referring to the match we just talked about, and I thought you might have been referring to this one. I think we were talking about the Cactus versus Sting match, but this is the one that my mind kind of went to. So, this match finished as number 39 on the voter composite list, which have dropped. The finals have dropped by now on placetobenation.com. This was also Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal, but unfortunately, Cheatham the Midget was not chanting it, and it was not a Coal Miner's Love match.
Shucks.
Because there's so many great Coal Miner's Love matches, so. This did become a Texas death match. So match starts on the ramp, and Tony kind of relays the stupid Lost in Cleveland angle. Make sure we all know that. And Vader just takes his mask off immediately. And I think that's kind of one of his tells when he really means business. So so they go right after it. You know, Jack's laying in stiff shots and post shots and chairs. He's kind of getting his shine. Of course, Vader quickly turns that tide. The fans are chanting for Jack. They're really with him. He suplexes Vader on the ramp. And I don't know how it happened, but Jack's bleeding. Race brings in a chair. And Cactus hits him in the solar plexus, which, if you're new to the show, that's every time I say the solar plexus, I mean the nuts. So, which is what the way I've usually found wrestling announcers mean that as well. And then he takes the chair and he waffles Vader a couple times, and Vader falls into the graveyard because it's Halloween Havoc. So there's this really cool kind of set. They have a cool look with the fog on the set, and they roll into a grave that says RIP Vader. So the ref kind of makes a big show of saying, yeah, he's not going to go down and count. And Cactus comes up. He's bleeding pretty good. And now Vader comes out of the grave that was marked with his own name, and he comes out bleeding. Cactus hits a clothesline for a fall, but once they get the fall, there's a 30-second rest period, and then after the 30-second rest period, Vader has 10 to get up. So those are the rules that they're working with. Cactus Elbow gets another fall, and Vader looks a lot more beat up than you usually see. And he's kind of taking a shit kicking in this. It's just a violent, bloody mess. Vader's got a crimson mask. Cactus brings in a table, but the kind of, like you were saying in the last match, Jay, he doesn't set it up like they always set up tables these days. He sets up the legs out. So if he would have rammed Vader into it, then the legs would have hit him right in the head. But the ref realized that, I guess, and turned it around. At one point, Tony and Jesse say they're getting sprayed with blood, and I believe them because both guys are just laying in stiff-ass punches before Vader goes into that table. So lucky for him, the ref had turned it around. Cactus does a sunset flip to the outside. Vader misses his fat-ass splash, and then Vader hits Jack with a chair. But like, and then this is the same point that you made the last time, that the legs are out. So he hit him kind of with the legs instead of like a folded up chair. I think it was a plastic chair, and he hit him with the leg side. So it just, it looked kind of sick. And then Vader hits the Vader salt for a fall is what I put. And then I said, did they call it that or did I just make that up? I don't know. I might be trademarking moves for Vader right now. But and then the fight goes to the ramp. Jack jumps on his back to try a choke or a sleeper, but Vader just falls back on him, which looked very painful on the ramp. I mean, Vader is not the guy you want falling back on you like that. He hits a chair shot and an DDT on the chair, and then Vader gets a fall. During the rest period, Jack hits a DDT, and now both guys are down. Both guys have to pin to get up. So, Grace hits Jack with a taser, which he'd been kind of hitting, and he'd been pushing the button so you could hear it, and the announcers were wondering what were happening. But that's how Vader wins, because Harley Race hit Jack with a taser when he was trying to get up. And I do think the stiff hurt the match a little bit. I'd have rather had this just a no DQ falls count anywhere instead of the BS 30-second rest and then 10 count to make it up, which... like, that almost requires a screwy finish, especially the beating these guys are giving each other. You'd have to shoot one of them with a gun, or I guess hit him with a taser to get him to actually stay down that long. So, I mean, I thought the brawl leading up to it more than made up the stiff in the finish, but you know, I do think that the stiff hurt it just a little bit.
Yeah, and I would say that's probably, you know, because like on paper, this definitely, I would. Like Cactus versus Vader seems like a top third or even like top 10 on my list, if I'm being honest, because it just sounds fantastic. Like we've already talked about. I think if you can make the list like these two have had on both of ours, if you can make it with a Saturday night match, I think when you get a marquee matchup like this, it's kind of almost thinking like, man, this could be like an all timer. And for me, I think it is. Like you said, the stip does hurt a bit. I think if the whole match kind of went more with the first like half when it's just them brawling, I think it would probably be higher for me. Not that I had it low. I had it 46, so still the top half. But like you said, I think it's just the stip is so tough, especially when you have like Vader, because it kind of hurts because, I mean, it makes it really hard to believe that Cactus has any shot of like keeping Vader down for what is effectively what going to be, what, 40 seconds or something like that? Because they get the 30-second rest period and then the 10 set, like, I don't know, even if they wanted to do something like a weird step, I think even a last man standing could have been more effective because the 30 seconds just really kind of hurts the flow of the match at times. And like you said, it kind of guarantees you're going to get some nonsense like with the cattle prod or whatever. So I think it kind of, when they start getting the pinfalls in the last portion, I think it does kind of make the final portion of the match. Like to me, it kind of hurts the building to a hot finish because just by the nature of the match, you're going to have more pinfalls because the guys are getting more beat up. But then for every pinfall, you have to do the rest period. So it can kind of make it get a little slow. And then, like you said, you almost have to do something ridiculous to keep either one of these guys down for 30 seconds. So I think it's just, I think it's like amazing that they had this good of a match with such a weird stipulation, because I think a lot of people would have been, you know, hard pressed to even have this good of a match with the stip. So good on them, because it is a fantastic, like those, like I said, the first kind of early portion of the match is just, it's just money. Like, it's perfect. Just them beating the piss out of each other in the beginning is awesome.
Yeah. And I think you had this one at number 46. I think I got to say that. So. All right. Moving along to your number 29, Jake.
Yes, my 29, which is, I think, probably, if I had to guess, I might be the high voter on this one. But I've always really liked this match. I like, so this is Shane Douglas and Steamboat versus Pillman and Barry Windham from Starrcade 92, which, again, I know I'm probably a little high on this. But I always liked the Shane Douglas and Ricky Steamboat team in rewatching all this stuff. And a lot of this I kind of watched in chronological order because I wanted to have context for it, and it was kind of all available to me and easy to watch in order, so I did that. And I kind of was surprised by how much I liked the Steamboat Shane Douglas team. Like, Shane Douglas in 92 was kind of a fun little I don't want to say like a revelation, because I don't think it was like this amazing, but I was kind of pleasantly surprised by him. And the Pillman and Barry Windham team was pretty fun, because those guys are both great. But the thing I like most about this match, it's like, obviously, all these guys are extremely talented. Well, maybe not Shane Douglas. He might not be extremely talented. He's talented, though. He's much better. I enjoy him much better here than I would in other points in his career. But anyway, the thing I love about this is because in this role, Shane Douglas is kind of seen as, like, he's teaming Ricky Steamboat. Ricky Steamboat's kind of, like, presented as his mentor, kind of. Like, he's the veteran, and then Douglas is sort of the rookie, and that's sort of the relationship and the dynamic of the team. And I feel like they do a really awesome job of telling the story, because I think by this point they had kind of been teaming quite a bit throughout 92, I want to say. And so, or at least a little bit, but I thought they did a really good job of establishing, like, Shane Douglas was really trying to, like, prove himself to Ricky Steamboat in this match and prove that he was worthy of being on his team, and that it wasn't always going to have to be Steamboat to carry the match. So it's he puts in a really, like, awesome workhorse performance, I should say. Like, and that thread runs throughout the entire match. Like, basically him trying to prove that he is worthy of being Steamboat's partner, which I think is really cool. And then on the other side, you have Steamboat, who gets really, really pissed off because he really doesn't get to get in the match this much, which is an interesting dynamic, because you kind of think of him as the workhorse. Like, if you were going to have a tag match with this team, that Steamboat would do the heavy lifting, and they kind of play off of that and reverse it. And so it's a lot of Steamboat on the apron, like, getting pissed off, and they do a good job of, like, the heels constantly frustrating him to the point where he gets pissed off and gets the chair and, like, uses the chair, which is really which is a really cool moment. Like, him losing his shit is really awesome. Like, pissed off Steamboat, I find, is really awesome in this match. And then Pillman and Barry obviously play their roles really well. Like I said, those guys are all-timers. So I think that, and like I said, I just love the story of Douglas as the kind of the young guy trying to prove himself. And then they end up winning, and it's a really cool moment because they build throughout this entire match. You know, like, is Shane Douglas going to be able to do it? Because he kind of needs to, you know, just the way the match is flowing, he's going to have to be the one to do it. And then he finally does, and it's a really cool moment. So, yeah, it's awesome. It's good stuff. Like I said, I know I'm probably high on this one, but I don't know. I really like this match a whole lot.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great match. I had it number 69 on my list. The voter composite list had it finishing at number 58, so I think there is a lot of appreciation for this match, and I don't know if I would say it's a hidden gem, because it was on a Starrcade, but I think it was kind of under the radar. This is not one that I would have thought, well, that's probably going to make my list, until I did, like, a similar chronological watch like you were talking about.
Yeah, it doesn't, like, pop on paper, you know, because, like, Pillman and Barry Windham are not some, like, well-known team, you know? It's not like a lot of these where you have the Midnight Express, the Fantastics, like these marquee teams. Like, Windham and Pillman seem a little bit kind of hodgepodge as a team, so I think that could be part of it.
Yeah, I think they were, like, Hollywood Blondes 1.0. So, and Barry was gone again, as he, you know, would occasionally do. So, and I found the heel team to be very interesting as well, because I mean, I think there's some history there, because Steamboat and Douglas won the the tag titles from Dustin Barry Windham, and Barry was a babyface then, but that was when he turned heel because, if I remember right, Dustin kind of like accidentally headbutted one of the two in the solar plexus, but instead of capitalizing, he was a good babyface and like made sure they were all right and promptly got pinned. And like, I remember Barry's facial reactions were so great. He's like, "What are you doing?" And then he turned heel on Dustin, but then also attacked Douglas and Steamboat with a chair after the loss. So that kind of led to him teaming with Pillman here. And I thought they did a really good job. And, you know, like you said, I like the dynamic with Steamboat and Douglas. This is also my favorite version of Shane Douglas. So I thought they did a really good job. It's a really good tag team match there. So I like that. And that is actually another transition into my number 29 match, which is also a really good tag team match and also includes Ricky Steamboat. And that is Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood versus Sergeant Slaughter and Don Kernodle in the final conflict cage match. And so this, this finished as match number 34 and on the voters poll, and it is no time limit. Anything goes. And if Youngblood and Steamboat don't win, they'll break up as a team. You have Sandy Scott as the ref. So this just has a really big match feel and kind of plays into the matches. Both teams are being pretty cautious early on so that they don't make any costly mistakes. Slaughter's clean shaven here, and that freaks me out a little bit. I'm not used to seeing that. The faces kind of like work a headlock early, but they do fire up with chops or moves off the top rope to avoid losing the crowd just periodically, and also to give David Crockett something to get excited about. But they do a pretty long heel in peril on Kernodle for about, he's in for about 15 minutes before he makes the tag. And then Slaughter immediately kind of turns things up a little bit, taking some big bumps into the cage. And then he's got this battle to try to ram Youngblood into the cage unsuccessfully. But Slaughter finally turns the tide. He does a leapfrog, and then he slams Youngblood into the fence and then just repeats. Like, he hits him several times in there. I assume that he's telling me, "Wait already, you bastard. Come on." And you never do see that. Youngblood did a great play job, but he is selling like he's half dead as the first face in peril anyway. So Slaughter tries for a Cobra Clutch, but Jay drops down immediately to avoid it. And it's like he knew it was coming, so he wanted to avoid that. And he slams Slaughter into the cage. Slaughter has no trouble blading, as Cottle immediately says he's a mess. And he is. So both men make a tag. Steamboat is bleeding now, and then Kernodle goes into a cage, and he gets cut, and Cottle says, "Oh boy, is he?" You know, as only, well, actually, I had Cottle, it may have been Crockett, so, and Kernodle hits a clothesline, as he's, you know, bleeding quite profusely here. Steamboat is the second face in peril, as they're all kind of staggering around the ring for Cottle. You know, and it's really believable because the match has gone long and everybody's bleeding. I have everybody's bleeding except that pussy Youngblood, who won't scar himself for his craft. But I actually think he might have been bleeding just a little less, so I can't tell for sure. Kernodle and Slaughter had a cool double team power slam, and then holy shit, Slaughter went for a splash off the top of the cage. And Cottle says if he did. He'd have crushed him with all that weight if he'd have hit it, and I can't agree. I mean, credit to Slaughter, though. You don't see a guy his size jumping off the top of a cage very often. So, Steamboat makes a hot tag, and Kyle says they're all a mess, so maybe Youngblood is bleeding. And Steamboat presses Youngblood onto Slaughter, and they both do a slingshot to the cage on both heels. So, it's so cool to see the faces kind of slowly building momentum instead of like that's going to the finish right after the hot tag. And the faces put the heels into a cobra clutch and a sleeper. Slaughter loads up his elbow guard for the Slaughter Cannon clothesline. And he rolls Kernodle on top and tells Sandy Scott to count. But instead, Sandy Scott starts pushing Slaughter out of the cage until he leaves the ring, which gave Steamboat time to switch them around. So he puts Youngblood on top for the win. So, and of course, the video I was watching cut out right at that time. So it took me a couple watchings to figure out exactly what the finish was. But that was it. And then all the other faces come in to the cage to celebrate with Steamboat and Youngblood. So just to make it feel like a really big deal. So, and this was kind of the precursor to pay-per-view in general. It was like the big event, I think, that led them to believe that Starrcade could be a success, that they could really do this, you know, with this type of event. I thought the match started a little slow, but it really escalated, and it really did have me by the end. You know, it escalated and built up even more so than like what you're used to in a typical Southern tag formula.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one too. I had 59, so maybe not as high as the consensus, but everything you said, it's real fun. I've said before in other matches we've talked about that Steamboat and Youngblood are a good, like, fiery babyface team. And I love this early NWA Slaughter. I always love him. If anybody ever wants to see some quality squash matches, watch those like old Mid-Atlantic TVs from like 1981 and stuff, where you just see like Slaughter just murdering jobbers with the Cobra Clutch. Is really fun. And it's a cool dynamic with him and Don Kernodle, because it's like Don Kernodle's like his private or whatever, I think. Or wait, no, am I thinking of, that's not Don Kernodle, that's somebody else. But I still think him and Kernodle had a similar dynamic. I think I'm thinking of, oh God, who was it that was like his private? I can't think.
Yeah, I know the guy you're talking about. It's a really good tag team match in WWF.
Yeah, it's Boris Zukov. This is like he's not Boris Zukov at the time, but it's the same guy. Yeah. I'm blanking on his name, but whatever. But I think him and Kernodle might have a similar dynamic. I'm not sure. But anyway, this Slaughter, I love. He's an awesome heel in this early 80s NWA run. So I'm with you. It's really fun. I like the only other thing I would point out is like you said, I like that they really do that long kind of early babyface shine on Don Kernodle, and then Slaughter gets in, and it kind of, instead of, it's like a reverse hot tag. Like, he gets the hot tag, but then he gets cut off immediately, and they start whipping his ass too, which is kind of fun. It just gets the crowd more into the faces, which I thought was cool. But yeah, this is a fun match. Like, it definitely has that early 80s energy to it in a good way.
Yeah.
But so with that, we will go to, so I think we'll be on my number 28 now. Right. Yes, my number 28, which would be the Steiners versus the Nasties from, who would have thought, Nasty Boys two times in my top 30 on my list here. Good on you, Nasty Boys. But anyway, it's them from Halloween Havoc 1990. So this, I think, is, I'd be interested. Do you have this off the top, Tyler? Where did this finish? Because I imagine it's probably pretty high, because I know this one is another kind of beloved. Like, I think what helps matches on this list is if it's like, the more it's, I feel like consensus is high on it. Like, I feel like a lot of people probably had high votes for this match, but,
yes, this match finished number 40.
So a bit higher than that, but, yeah. So I always love this one. It's not, again, it's not a super long match. It's not like an epic or anything. But, man, it's just awesome. Like, it's a great kind of styles clash here. We have the Nasty Boys who are, like, the brawlers, the Steiners who could kind of are, like, rough and tough, but a little bit more like wrestlers. But I thought the Nasties really come off as badasses in this. And I think that's a, I think it's a credit to them in this match and the way they work it to make the Nasty Boys really look like a threat. Because you have to try and do something to make this believable. Because when you see the Nasty Boys, like, physically, and then you see the Steiners, you kind of think, like, there's no way the Nasty Boys should have any kind of chance. And so they do a good job of, like, doing little things to make it come off like they're credible against the Steiners. Like, or else you would think, how can the Steiners, like, lose against these, like, two kind of fat guys? But, like, it is a nice twist that they use kind of, like, their, they kind of use their, like, heelish kind of you know, tendencies to get upper hand on him. And I thought it was cool, like having them get like a like working over Scott Steiner. I thought it was an interesting twist. They do a good job of commentary of pointing this out, because it's like commentary is even kind of shocked, like, man, the Nasty Boys are able to hang with them, and they're kind of like getting the upper hand. Like, they even like cut off the hot tag, whatever the Steiners get the hot tag, they even cut that off, which is really cool stuff. And awesome bumps, like great suplexes at all, as always, from the Steiners. Like Scott takes a sick, he gets slammed outside, and it's a really great bump. So many Steiner lines, like JR gets to say Steiner line about 400 times in this one, because there's just so many Steiner lines, and the Nasty sell that really well. I just love the chemistry of these two teams together. Like, it just really clicked for them on this night. Like, and then like at the end, it's kind of like the Steiners are able to win because they sort of end up taking advantage of the chaos, because that sort of like the Nasty Boys kind of get it to be their sort of match with like the way it gets a little chaotic, and the Steiners just kind of meet them there and take advantage and get the win. It's just, I don't know. I've always loved this match. It's a weird thing too, in that I just, anything from Havoc 90, like, gets a small boost for me, because you get that cool red ring, the canvas, which for whatever reason just always pops me. But it just, yeah, this is an awesome tag match. I always love this one. Just great bumps in this one is something that always, every time I think of this match, it's probably the first thing that comes to mind. It's just awesome bumps. Just nothing like really that insane. Just like everything, like all the suplexes, like the Steiner's belly to bellies, all those Steiner lines. It just, everything gets laid in there. It's like, it's kind of the same thing of with the Cactus and Max Payne match. It's almost like the Nasty's like, look, we know you guys like to beat the piss out of people. Let's go in there. We'll both, you know, beat each other up, and we'll have a good match. And that's what they did. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, this was my number 62 match, and I should have been higher on this one. So this is one of those weird matches that every time I watch that, it seems to grow on me a little more. Cause I remember like maybe the first time I'd watched it, I just didn't hit with me that much. And then every other time I've been like, oh yeah, that's good. And this last time, it really, I was like, wow, this match is better than I gave it credit for. So I remembered the chaos and some of the bomb throwing, you know, that you're talking about. And I'll just say a little bit that I had Rick comes to the ring with the belt on backwards, and brawling immediately starts before the bell. Once the Steiners hit the ring, there's post shots and chair shots, all four going at it. After it, Scott hits the second rope belly to belly on Sags right off the bat. Scott hits a tiger driver. Then Rick hits the top rope doomsday bulldog, and we're like 5 minutes in. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I went through that play by play was to say we're only 5 minutes in. So that's kind of the chaos that, you know, you mentioned, and that's very memorable from this match. And what I didn't remember as much was Scott's playing facing peril, and the Nasty Boys really worked the back over, like, and it makes sense. You know, they're doing abdominal stretches and Boston crabs and things like that to really, you know, work that back. And I just, you know, I've talked about it in some past episodes where I didn't remember the Steiners doing the formula all that much, but they really would, you know, and Scott would be the face in peril. So, and I had that Sags was a bloody mess, and Paulie on commentary notes that it doesn't even bother him. He doesn't even care. So, anyway, I liked both the chaos and then like some of that body work that, you know, I maybe hadn't given them as much credit for on that. So, all right, go on to my number 28, I believe, which is the Rock and Roll Express versus the Midnight Express from Wrestle War 1990. And Jake, I believe you did not have this one on your list. So
I did not. Curtain. So this is probably be our biggest disconnect. I would say biggest disconnect of, we'll talk about another one, but there's other reasons why that are not necessarily the quality of the match as to why, like, maybe I didn't rate it and you did, but this is one that I did not rate that I did watch. So I'll let you speak first, because obviously you hold it in pretty high regard.
Yeah. So this match finished is number 29 on the voters list. So, and you know, this match kind of holds a place in my heart. It is on the Rise and Fall of WCW DVD, which will make a few appearances on here. So I've seen this sometime, you know, many times. So I consider this match a bit of a postscript to their feud. But I do think it's their best match, even if it's the end of their run. Stan introduces Cornette as the man that stole Ivana from Donald Trump. So, timely joke, I guess. Maybe, I don't know. But did not expect that to be timely anyway. JR gets his old joke about not knowing Cornette liked girls and that he was a mixed doubles champ, but his partner was a man. And one thing about this match, and this, you know, I mean, you can talk about it. Maybe this is one of the things that you didn't like, but Cornette stooges around a lot and during the shine, and like he really hams it up. He gets into the ring to fight the ref, and then when the I think it was Mickey James comes back at him, he, you know, cartoonishly falls down and gets caught in the ropes, and he seesawing back and forth, and it's kind of a cheesy comedy spot, but I think Cornette can pull it off, and I just thought it worked out okay here. The Rock and Roll get quite a lot of shine, and that's not uncommon in their matches. But in this one, I think they did a little more with the offense. Like Ricky Morton literally walks up Eaton from a knuckle lock, and then he jumps off his shoulders to nail Stan. Stan ducks out between the ropes, and Ricky literally kicks his ass outside, and JR says he wonders if he's bruised, and that Cornette will tell us later. Cornette takes a shot outside, and Stan gives him a heart massage, allowing Terry Funk, who's also on commentary, to say that can't be right because Cornette doesn't have a heart. The Rock and Rolls, like I said, are doing more offense than they usually do. They're being a bit more creative, I felt like. Bobby and Ricky have a great exchange of punches. I mean, because they both throw really good punches, I think, and then they both tumble over the top. Stan sprints over and slams Ricky and rams his head into the railing to allow the Midnights to take over. But I mean, I just like that he, you know, made a dead run to make sure he was the first one there. Bobby hits a nice backbreaker, and then the Midnight Express hit that sweet leapfrog crossbody. Then Stan's karate in a double team. So they're just kind of doing all their hits, and Ricky is the face in peril. I'm as shocked as you there. Never seen this happen before, but, and both teams may be near the end of their runs, but they can still win the crowd over during a match. So, and I think that they are a little long in the tooth here, maybe a little past the expiration date, particularly the Rock and Rolls. But again, when they get to working a match, they pretty much always get the desired reaction. The Midnights are just doing tons of blind tags to cut off Ricky's hope spots. Bobby hits a top rope elbow. But Robert breaks it up before we could test my theory that only the Alabama Jam can finish. So, damn you, Robert. Bobby's doing a good job of working the arm, and they try a rocket launcher, but it hits the knees. So it's a hot tag for Robert. All four are in. Cornette hits Robert with the racket, but he kicks out. And Ricky breaks up a flapjack, and then Robert gets the pin in a bit of an awkward spot. But to me, this match is just like comfort food. I don't know how many times I've watched it, but I just always enjoy it. It's a bit bittersweet to me because both teams are really gone soon. And like I said, they do feel a little dated, especially the Rock and Rolls, but they could pretty much always get over.
Yeah, so I didn't have this one rated, and that might be underrating it by not having it on the list at all. But I think even if I would, it probably wouldn't be quite as high. And I don't know what it is. I don't think specifically the Cornette stuff. I think rewatching it, maybe overall, it was just a little bit too, like, stally for me at points in the match. That maybe hurt it a bit for me. I think that would probably be my biggest negative on it. Because I do like when they're just in there going at it. I think it's got great energy and like it. Obviously, these two teams are excellent. I mean, I've had them at other places on my list, and I'm not done with them by any stretch. I'm going to talk about both in just a few minutes. So it's nothing against these two teams. I don't know if it's just maybe I wanted to see more of them just straight going at it, but I don't know. Maybe I'll just have to watch it again. But I just at times I felt it was a little too stally. I don't know. I guess that would be my biggest takeaway as like a negative. But maybe not rating it was maybe a bit too harsh, I would say. I probably could have bumped some other junk that I have on this list, maybe.
Well, I thought that I might very well be the high vote on this, and it turned out that was not the case, but I fully expect it. I do know that of the matches I like that aren't, I mean, I thought I would probably be a little higher than consensus. So, although I finished 29th, and did I have it? 28th. So, yes, up by one spot.
Finger on the pulse, Tyler. You get your finger on the pulse.
That's exactly right. Right.
Now, I will say probably this one, like we talked earlier about the Shane Douglas match. This one, for sure, has the on paper, because you get Rock and Rolls versus Midnights. So, right. On paper, it's got that going for it, you know. All right. So anyway, I guess we're on to my 27. So my number 27 is a, another tag match here. It's going to be, Arn and Tully versus, Luger and Barry Windham for the NWA World Tag Team Championship on, Clash of the Champions 1. Excellent show, as we've said many times doing these podcasts, but anyway, yeah, to me, this is just like a perfect, like 10 minute TV tag match. It's just, it hits everything you want. The crowd energy on this entire show during this match is off the charts. I think Luger is fantastic in this opening segment where like the opening kind of shine, he's just after both. He's after Arn and Tully. Of course, Arn and Tully are excellent kind of stooging around, and it's just Luger in this peak. Right. And it's not going to be the last time we talk about him by any stretch, but him in this like kind of 88 to 90 run is just, I don't know. He's just so damn good. And this is it too. Like he's playing the face here and he's just, the crowd is feeding into every single thing he does. And like this whole match, I feel like even after that, after like Luger's hot opening, it's just, the crowd is just with them for everything. And every move feels big and you can feel the crowd reacting to every single thing they do. And Arn and Tully do a good job because they kind of play the dynamic that, you know, Luger and Windham kind of have a bit of the size advantage and the power advantage and kind of, you know, they have that maybe like the intensity, but then they sort of use Arn and Tully trying to use the pace and their technical ability, then try and ground these kind of two fiery baby faces, which is really awesome. And Barry selling particularly is really awesome in this. We'll get some more Barry love later on in a minute. But and then you get the you get JJ trying to, like, he starts getting desperate. He goes to use the chair. He puts it in, but it backfires on him. I think it's, I want to say it's Arn that ends up hitting the chair. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's either Arn or Tully that hits the chair when JJ goes to use it. And then so it backfires on him. And then Lex and Barry win the titles and the crowd pops huge. Like I said, it's just, to me, it is just almost like a perfect 10-minute TV, like, high energy tag match. It's just awesome. Like there's never a dull moment throughout the entire thing. They never lose you. It ebbs and flows well. Both teams play in their roles to a T. It's just excellent stuff across the board.
Oh, for sure. So this match finished number 24 on the voters list.
Oh.
So, yeah. And well, I mean, so I had it. Well, I had it 33 and you had it 27. So we're, mm-hmm. you know, we're right there with them. So, and it is just fantastic for every reason you said. You know, it looked to me like the normal structure you would expect in a good tag team match, but just like it was on fast forward. The pace is so fast, but they do all the things. So, like you said, that you get a little bit of shine, but then they work Luger over and he's facing peril. And they're, it's JR and Tony, who I like both of them a lot. So I think they work well together. I understand they didn't care for each other very much. So they didn't have great chemistry here, or didn't enjoy working with each other. But, and they say that, you know, they're working over Luger's well developed thighs, and they say it's a large muscle in the body. And it kind of makes sense that since Luger is so muscular, they can give him, it's easier to give him a Charlie horse. So, and then he makes the hot tag to Windham, like you mentioned. So that goes for, you know, and then soon they turn the tables and it's just like all the things that normally happen are happening, but it's really fast, but it doesn't really feel like it wasn't earned. If that makes any sense, it doesn't feel like they're rushing through it, even though they are, they're moving so fast. At one point, Tully hits his slingshot suplex and he celebrates before he gets the cover. Like he throws his hands up in the air, you know, like he's just scored a touchdown before he makes the cover. And then Luger runs wild, his power moves, and then the ending that you mentioned with Arn going into the chair that JJ put up there. And that is a massive pop, and we talk about it all the time, how over all these 80s matches are, but this might be the most, like you said, on this night, that crowd might be the best one. So, and I mentioned this on the last match that, you know, how many times I'd watched this one. This is another one that I have on, I think, more than one DVD, Jake, and I've lost track of how many times I've seen this one, but it gets me pumped every time. It has the desired effect every time I see this one. So
it's just so satisfying, and like, it's almost like you don't, you know, because I guess you could say, like, well, you don't want to factor in the crowd too much, because then it's like, you know, well, what if the crowd was this hot for like some crap match? But it just all comes together so well. And I think that's why the pace works so well, because it just feels like they're feeding off the energy that the crowd's giving them. And so I think it makes sense to work it so fast, because the crowd is so hot. It doesn't make sense to slow it down too much, because why do it that way? Just go with the crowd and just do this like 10-minute kind of balls to the wall sprint and go with what they're giving you. So, yeah, it's awesome. Yeah,
and they didn't have time to do that on the first. I mean, the first class. I think I might argue it is the most loaded show. It's a little shorter than most of the other top pay per views. It's 2 hours, but my God, I mean, there were three matches from that show that made my top 100. So, I mean, you can't deny that. So, yeah, and you know, I understand it's the arguments, you know, pro or con, how much you take that into account, but especially at this time, that was really a big part of what they were trying to do. They weren't trying to have a great match. They were trying to get the crowd engaged. You know, that was how they usually measured success. So, yeah, I think that's a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt.
All right. Moving on. My number 27 is Sting versus Vader from the Great American Bash 1992. I believe you have that a little bit higher, Jake. So, maybe we'll talk about that later.
Yes, I do have that one a little higher. So we'll go to my 26. My 26 will be the Midnight Express versus Ric Flair and Barry Windham from Clash number 4 from December of 88. So I actually, you know, I don't have a ton of notes for this. I rewatched it again before we did this pod. And like, so one thing about this that I think probably made it so high on mine is just Bobby Eaton and Ric Flair together. It's just like watching this match, I was just thinking like, man, Eaton and Flair, just like put it in my veins, like give it to me. This is what I need. And they are awesome in this match. Like Flair just bumping around like crazy throughout it. I mean, Barry's great as always, but that was just to me the thing that really stood out. I mean, it's just, you know, it's not a ton I can say about it. I could sit here and go through like all the moves that they do and everything. It's just so crisp. Everything is just, everything flows so well. You know, because you have, like, to me, you would probably say like pure wrestlers like Ric Flair and Bobby Eaton are definitely up there. And Barry Windham, too. I mean, they're like, you know, they just know what to do. It just feels so like the flow of what they do is just so perfect. Like they go from move to move and it all just seems so seamless and they work the crowd, it ebbs and flows. You know, it's like, it's not something, it's almost hard for me to describe it and really say like what specifically it is. It's just like when you see it, it works so well. And I know I've said that a lot on doing these and it's the only way I could describe it. I don't know. It's very hard to put into words what it is, but I think it's when you see these guys that are just so talented and just have such a feel for this that it's just amazing. It's just like a joy to watch them do it. And I thought that that's what this match was to me. I don't know. It's like all I have to say about it. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It's a great match. So I had it number 65. The voters, the final tally, this match finished number 70, which I think is pretty good because I didn't feel like it was a super heralded match before starting this. So, the announcers sell how cool it is for two top singles guys to be going against, I think they said, the smoothest tag team, which I just took to be code for the best workers. So I thought that was interesting. That's kind of a big part of the story of the match, I think. And another thing that's interesting is the Midnights are faces, which, you know, it's a real brief run, but I like their face work a lot. So right off the bat, Flair's selling for the Midnights. They get their shine. And you mentioned the interactions with Eaton. And Eaton's offense looks great, especially his punches. Stan comes in with his karate and then does his little stripper dance and his enziguri. So he's getting his shit in too. So, and again, they talk about the battle between the teamwork of the Midnight Express and then the superior skill of the Horsemen, you know, Flair and Wyndham being the main eventers. But they really give the Midnights quite a lot. So at one point, the Midnights get double figure fours. And again, the Horsemen giving them so much is part of what's making this such a great match. And the crowd is here for it, and so am I. So, I thought it was a great performance by Eaton, like you mentioned, both in the shine and then he played the face in peril. He finally made the hot tag to Stan, and I said it's like a Cobra Kai school karate rumble on Flair and Wyndham. And then the Midnights hit the double goozle with Eaton hits the clothesline and Stan sweeping the leg like Johnny Lawrence. So I don't know, but there's a chance I was watching some Cobra Kai when I was writing my notes. So maybe I had a cocktail or two. Yeah, probably, because the next line is that Wyndham sells it like the town wino staggering around. So I must have been getting creative. You're supposed to write drunk and edit sober. I may have forgotten the second part of that, but I think I tried to adhere to the first. So Eaton does hit his Alabama Jam, but Dylan is on the apron and he takes off his shoe and throws it into the ring. So, you know, kind of hearing Austin Powers there, honestly. Who throws a shoe? But Cornette swaps Dylan on the ass with the tennis racket, but Blair clocks Eaton with the shoe for the three count. Yeah, we're continuing our run of tag team goodness here.
Yes, yes, we are. I'm about to swerve us in a minute, though, don't worry.
Yeah, well, I'm going to swerve us with my next pick, but that is Ric Flair versus Lex Luger from Wrestle War 1990, which I believe you have higher on your list. So
oh, yes, I do.
That will be the only mention thus far.
Very fond of that match, but we'll get to it eventually. Okay, my number 25, which maybe is quite a turn from us talking about all these kind of 80s matches, and this will be Ric Flair versus Hulk Hogan from Bash at the Beach 1994. So definitely has the history points going for it, because it was a huge match at the time, arguably, at least, like, I guess commercially or whatever you want to say, maybe their biggest match they'd ever done. This is right when Hogan comes in. Tons of hype going into it. I think it got a huge buy rate for him. So it's huge. And it really built it up pretty well considering how little time they had, because I don't think they had enough time to really build it all that well, because it's really, I mean, Hogan had just come in the spring. And so it's not like they had this, could build up this big epic storyline, but they still did a good job of building what they had. It's so bombastic the way they set this all up. Like, yeah, Buffer comparing it to the fucking moon landing and stuff, which is awesome. Like he lists all these things, like, in, whatever, 25 years ago or something, we landed on the moon. And it's like, what? This is absurd. But anyway, and then Flair's got Sherry with him. It has that the big match energy. The crowd is really into it. I kind of like the early portion because it's kind of Hogan, like, wrestling a Flair match, kind of. Like, he's actually wrestling in this. I mean, they get down to it later, but the early part of this really is kind of Hogan, like, going down and taking, like arm bar, not arm bars, but, like, arm locks and stuff. Like, it's a very... It's got a lot of wrestling for a Hulk Hogan match, I'll say. Like, it's interesting to see him get worked over in some holds. Like, so he's kind of going with Flair's flow. And you could tell, like, Flair is kind of working this match. I think you could even tell, it's not, like, obvious, but it's just sort of, you could see Flair kind of calling the spots, which I think is, of course, you know, that's what he does. But it's just interesting with Hogan to see Flair kind of control the way this match flows. And it's kind of cool because you sort of get the best of both worlds, because you get, you know, Flair doing kind of his match with kind of taking Hogan with him. But then you get Hogan's kind of energy that he gets from the crowd. So you get all that together. I think it really works awesome in this match. Like Flair gets a whole lot, especially in the early part of the match. Like, it's not just Hogan coming in there and like squashing him. Like, Flair really is getting a lot of offense in. Like, Hogan misses the leg drop, which I thought was awesome. So they don't make it as if Hogan's just going to come in, he's going to beat the shit out of Flair and walk out the champ. Like, they really make Flair look credible. He's not just going to go in there and look like a loser. And like, even like Hogan, he goes for the first Hulk up and you think, oh, maybe that's it. But then, like, they cut him off. And to me, they do this so expertly. And maybe you could say, like, they go to the well too many times in this, but I don't, like, we're just talking about the crowd stuff. To me, it works because the more they do it, the more the crowd just keeps on building up for when Hogan's finally going to pull through. Because I want to say he hulks up, like, three times in this match. Like, he does the first one. Sherry kind of pulls the ref. They cut him off. You get the Sherry splash. She's awesome throughout this, just as, like, you know, Flair's a little bit of backup to try and to win this. And it's just, it's like a great mix of wrestling. Like I said, because you get the Flair turning it into a pretty good wrestling match, but then you get Hogan and all and Sherry, and you kind of get that sports entertainment-y bullshit kind of stuff going on. And it's an awesome mix. Like, Flair gets the figure four, and then just like Hogan just keeps fighting back. He gets out of that. He hulks up again and gets cut off. Like I said, I think he hulks up three times. And so by the end of it, the crowd finally, when he does do his final Hulk up and wins it, and he neutralizes Sherry, and he finally pulls through, the crowd just explodes because they've been waiting for it. They kind of know that Hogan's probably going to win this match because, you know, they just signed him. They're definitely hitching the wagons to Hogan now. But they do enough of making Flair look like a threat to get him, to make it seem like he's got a shot. And I don't know. I just love it. I know I'm probably high on this because if we're just talking about a pure wrestling match, I'm sure a lot of the matches we're talking about are much better wrestling-wise. But I thought this one was good enough wrestling-wise with everything else, the atmosphere, the way they built to the big crowd pop, the pomp and circumstance around the entire match. I think it's a nice I thought it was a nice spot for this match because I didn't want to put it any higher than this, but I do have a big place in my heart for this one because I think it's just – it's probably the best, like, of this style of match, maybe, in WCW's history. Like, the best kind of, not a pure wrestling match, more like a, the best way I could say is like a sports entertainment sort of match, for lack of a better term. So, I'm sure I might be the high vote in this match. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I didn't keep track of whether you were the high vote or not, but yeah. I think the main voter, the final list was closer to you than it was to me. So this match finished number 45 on the total list. So you certainly weren't alone. So, and I had it down at 95. And, you know, maybe I was a little low on it. So, I mean, I think the debut of Hogan alone makes this worthy of consideration. And the fact it's the first high-profile Hogan-Flair match makes it even more significant. And I know they had house show matches in the WWF and 92, but they never really pulled the trigger on anything more substantial than that. So, and on top of that, it is a really good match. I mean, I definitely think, like, it, I had it rated, you know, star wise enough to make it. I had it 4.25, and, you know, I think that that's a fair rating regardless. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Jake, when you said that it's kind of the combination between old school Flair kind of work rate and sports entertainment. I thought it was a great combination of Hogan's shtick and the more work rate heavy WCW matches, at least the Flair matches. So, and I think this could be Hogan's best work rate match, although it's hard for me to separate, like, the Hogan mystique and personality and charisma that he brings to those other great matches, like the Rock at WrestleMania 18, Ultimate Warrior, obviously at Halloween Havoc 98, but maybe they faced each other at WrestleMania 6 as well. So, and Andre the Giant from WrestleMania 3. So I don't know how to figure those things, but I think if it were a match with just kind of you two blind, it was a blind test, like you didn't know who the wrestlers were, two creator wrestlers, this might be his best worked match. if that makes any sense. So.
Yeah, like I said, I feel like there's not a ton of Hogan matches where you see him like on the mat getting worked over in a hold. It's not like the most common thing. Like, it kind of catches your attention.
Yeah, I do. The only thing that had me a little myth is, you know, mystery foreign objects, because Sherry threw some mystery foreign object with Flair and he hit Hogan with it before. I think the final Hulk up. Those mystery foreign objects have killed baby faces and WCW and Jim Crockett Promotions before it since the beginning of time. But Hogan gets the kick out. I said Flair should have used a roll of quarters. Maybe some washers, according to Jim Crockett. Yeah, maybe then.
Some washers.
Yeah.
Love it.
So I did think, I do regret the timing of Hogan coming in a little bit, because I think Flair was on his way to a really good babyface run. I thought that was would have been a good time to do it, but obviously with Hogan coming in, I mean, that's something you got to do, and you've got to pull the trigger on it. Like, they kind of had to do it the way they did with Hogan going over. It's just, yeah, I wish like Flair's heel turn would have been a little bit more organic and drawn out. It felt a little rushed. Like you said, they didn't get a chance to build much of a program, but you know, you can't complain about this match for sure. Okay, so that
all leads to mine. Back to the 80s work rate.
That's right. Okay, so my number 25 is Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, and Tully Blanchard versus Lex Luger, Sting, and Barry Windham from the first ever main event. And I had mentioned that I thought I might be the high vote on the Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express, but was not. On this one, I am the high vote, and this is one that I just kind of, I'm fairly aware that I'm a little, I'm probably biased towards this one, but it just hits everything that, it just hits that, you know, I think I've used the word comfort food before, but it just hits every note for me. So this finish is match number 98, and as I mentioned, I was the high vote on this one, so. Just barely eked it onto the list here, and must be thanks to me. So I just think this match is such a snapshot of WCW to me. It's during one of my favorite times with some of their biggest stars. It's the first episode of main event, and I just can't imagine a bigger match, you know, on the first episode. So Barry and Lex are the tag champs, having won the belts at Clash 1. And this just has an incredible pace, which is what really stands out to me. So Windham starts, and he looks like just a complete star against Tully and Flair. And then Sting's in next, and the Horsemen are stooging for him too. Lex comes in, and the Horsemen take over by clipping his knee. And then Arn hits a DDT, and Flair's in. And the Horsemen are just really working well together. And we've seen that in other matches we've talked about even tonight. The Horsemen, no matter the combination, seem like they always really work well in tag matches. I don't know if they were doing a lot of tagging in house shows, but they always seem to really work well together. At this point, JR notes that he's never seen any match at this pace for this long, and I tend to agree. As Arn hits another DDT, and Tully's in with a neck breaker, and the Horsemen are just constantly double-teaming. Luger no-sells a suplex and hits a clothesline, and then he gets a hot tag to Barry. And he runs wild while the crowd's just going batshit, as they commonly are. JJ throws a foreign object into Tully, who hits Barry for the win. So just, you know, some of the same topics I've talked about a lot during this time period. Incredible pace, incredible heat. Horsemen are so great at stooging and sewing. They make all the faces look good. But they're also so good at working tags. So, like, it's believable for a stud like Luger to look vulnerable as the face in peril. And this match also furthers the Barry and Lex versus the Horsemen story that pays off in a match that we talked about last episode with the turn. So, this is another one of those matches that I've had for years. I've watched forever. I still love this match. I understand it may not hit as the classics as some of the other ones on this list, but I'm quite proud to be the high voter on this one.
Yeah, so I wasn't as high, but so I was 78. But I'm with you in that it is a great horseman like showcase. Like you said, them as like a team. They just look like such a well oiled machine going after Luger. And to me that was like that's what really stuck with me after this match is like you mentioned, just no matter who you put in there, when it's the horseman, they just look like everything clicks for them. They just work so well together, and that's what stood out to me. But yeah, it's a good match. But, okay, so this one, this is a heavy hitter we have now, Tyler. So this would be my number 24 and your 87, which I feel like some will probably say that you got some splaining to do here, Tyler. I think even me having a 24 for some is low. Like, I would imagine this is probably one they got some number one votes. I want to say, I think I remember looking at it where it finally ranked. I don't remember exactly where, but I imagine it's pretty high because I thought 24 for me was maybe a bit low. Do you know, Tyler, do you have where it finished?
Yes. This match was number 8.
Ooh.
And I will just add, this match was unanimous, meaning it was on all submitted votes or on all submitted ballots. And I will talk more about that because I am prepared to make my defense, make my appeal to the court. I'll let you start off since it was higher on your list, and then I will make my explanations.
Yeah, so I will say that I'm I think at least partially with you on this, even though I didn't have it definitely not as low as you, but like it wasn't my highest Flair Funk match by any stretch. I have another match with these two much higher. So I did enjoy it, but I am one that maybe doesn't see quite as the all-timer classic. Like, I know I have a 24, but like I said, it's not my favorite from these two. You could definitely feel the feud in the match, which I think is, I feel like this is kind of the culmination of the feud throughout because it's at the end of 89. So I haven't even said it yet. So this is Flair versus Funk. I quit from Clash of Champions 9. Like I said, you could feel the feud that had been going throughout the entire year in this match. And this is sort of the blow off to it. And I think in that aspect, it really succeeds. And I think for the people who are super high on it, that they would have voted this number one, I feel like that's probably what clicks with them. It's just, I think maybe if I were more attached to this whole story, maybe if I was alive at the time to watch it or whatever, maybe it would click higher for me because I feel like of their matches, this is the one that feels the most, I don't know, like it's based on their feud and the storyline with it. And so if I had to guess, that's what really clicks for people because like it's awesome. Like the chops in this match are just like savage. Like Flair is like laying it in. Like it is some awesome stuff. Like he is really going after him. I love like all these sequences, like how pissed off Flair seems throughout this entire match. Like there's multiple points in the match where he just like jumps on Funk's back. Like he just runs and jumps on him, like which is kind of amazing. Like he comes off as like he has so much rage in him, I think is awesome in this. I think maybe I'm a bit low on it compared to some because maybe just the step, like the whole like hit. I'm not a huge fan of an I Quit matches where it just ends up with the guy like hitting them with a microphone, which I guess at the time was probably like novel, but maybe I'm just kind of over that whole thing of like hitting guys with a microphone, like, what do you say? What do you say? And you do get the good egg sucking dog, like he calls Flair an egg sucking dog, so that's great. I think my favorite sequence in the entire match is where it's like getting towards the end. I would say like the final third of the match and Flair's on top and he starts working the knee. And man, it is just awesome because it's like the typical Flair knee work. But like I said, he just looks so pissed. Like everything, he just seems to be laying it in a little bit. His facials are awesome. He just does an awesome job getting across like the hate that's in this feud kind of, which I think is great. Like to me, that was like the peak of this match is when he's just going after the knee and the leg of Funk. And he just looks so angry while he's doing it. And then he finally gets him in the figure four towards the end. And this is a really great sequence because obviously Funk is on the mic because they have the mic at his face to see if he's going to quit. He's like, oh, my leg is breaking. It's breaking. Oh, I quit. Like, so that's a cool sequence. The ending is fun. I think it's just, you know, I think you get a lot of fun like funkisms in this match, like getting to hear him on the mic, like I said, calling Flanagan sucking dog, the finish where he's saying his leg's breaking and, you know, he's kind of crying and whining in the figure four is fun. And they kind of do the respect angle because they go in saying like, well, whoever wins, they're going to shake hands or whatever. Or like if Flair wins, Funk's going to shake his hand, and they do. And then he turns on Gary Hart and all. So like I said, it's sort of the culmination of this entire feud, which is an all-time feud. So I think it has that juice to it. But I guess just as a match, I like another one from them a bit better, even though this is fun. It's a fun brawl. And like I said, that that sequence with Flair just going after the leg is just, man, I mean, it's a thing of beauty. It's fantastic. So, all right, Tyler, you want to go at this one and tell us why you hate this match? I'm just kidding. I know you don't hate it. But
I do not hate this match. I will start by saying that. But as I mentioned, the match was unanimous, which means, and I was the low vote at number 87. The high voter was at number 4. As luck would have it, I did happen to have that that spreadsheet pulled up, so I was able to look that up. And while I believe I am on an island in this thinking that it's the number 87 match, I do not believe it's a deserted island. I do remember some discussion on the Facebook page around the match, and I wasn't alone, but apparently the others that are lower on this match didn't submit their ballots. So, Your Honor, if it pleases the court, my defense is this. You mentioned the angle, and I think this angle is great. And I think that the decisive finish on free TV leads to a lot of love and praise. I do think the reputation of this match is greater than the actual match. It's a good wrestling match. But to me, the feud and the stips lend itself to be much more of a violent brawl than what we got. I don't really think either guy matched the intensity of their Great American Brawl match. And maybe that's not fair because that match is incredible. And listeners will notice that we have not yet talked about it yet. You did reference another match between these two. So perhaps that is some foreshadowing. There were a few violent spots like the pile driver on the floor, but for me, there were far less than I'd expect. And perhaps that was because it was on TV and not pay-per-view. And I think that helps build the match in people's minds, but it may have hurt the match because there's no blood, there's no weapons, there's no real big bumps. So it kind of pales in comparison to some of the other brawls, some of which even we've talked about tonight, the Cactus Vader or the tags against the Nasty Boys. And I also think that it didn't hit the emotional chords of like Tully Magnum or Piper Valentine. And again, those are all-timers, so there's no shame in not being those matches. It can still be a very good match, and I think this is a very good match. But, you know, that's why I don't feel like it is the all-timer that many people feel it is. Also, another point is, and you did mention the legwork, but, you know, I thought that the legwork was really condensed until right before the finish with the figure four, so... You know, I'm used to Flair working the leg all match, and that's kind of the story of the match. And then the figure four, he's working towards the figure four, but that never finishes it. This time, he didn't work the leg until late, and the announcers even mentioned that they were surprised that Flair wasn't working the leg. And by the same token, neither was Funk. And, you know, he has the spinning toe hold, which would be how he would be trying to finish an I Quit match. And I thought I didn't think they had great teases for I Quit, and I think the stipulation just makes that challenging, right? Like, yeah, he holds a microphone in his face and hits him with it. The egg sucking dog line is great, but there was never any point where I thought, oh, this could be the finish until it was the finish. So I do appreciate that Terry Funk submitted to Ric Flair's figure four, and he put that move over huge. I wish some other professional wrestler during the course of Flair's 30-year career had also done so, but that is a separate point. So, and that is my defense, Your Honor, and I ask for mercy from the court. So those are the points to explain why I felt the way I did about this match. And still, I do think it did make my list. So it wasn't I wasn't so far down on it that it didn't make my list, but that's why I was further down on it than others.
Yeah. And so to your point, because you know, to build off of a match we talked about earlier, I would agree that it's not maybe as like violent or intense as maybe you would expect, considering like we just talked about a match, well, kind of the sort of within this storyline where like Funk puts a plastic bag on his head and presumably tries to murder him. So I kind of get what you're saying there, where maybe it doesn't quite, the violence factor is maybe not there for something that's such a blood feud. So I get what you're saying on that one. For sure. All right. We roll on.
All right. My number 24 is this Ric Flair fellow, which is, I think this is the fifth or sixth match in a row he has been involved in. This one is Ric Flair versus Vader from Starrcade 1993. And I believe you have that a little bit higher, Jake, so maybe we will talk about it in the not-too-distant future.
Yes, we'll talk about it very soon. But until then, we will talk about my number 23, which is Arn and Ole, so the Andersons versus the Rock and Roll Express. So this is from an episode of Saturday Night, July 19th, 86. But I believe the actual match, the footage they're showing, is from the Great American Bash Tour. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Tyler.
Yes, I am unsure about that. So I will take your word for it.
I'm pretty sure it is. But anyway, this is an awesome match. I love this one so much. I love the Andersons, first off. The Rock and Rolls are awesome. It's just like a complete war. The crowd is completely molten throughout this entire match. And this match is pretty long. I want to say it's like 26 minutes or something. And so it is a long match. And the crowd is just lit the entire time. Like we've said a lot about these 80s crowds. Like you have mentioned a lot, Tyler. Like they are just so into it. And it's such a big part of these matches. Like I just love the way this ebbs and flows. Like it has a lot of back and forth stuff, but it never feels like perfunctory. It never feels like they're just going through the motions. It all makes sense. Like the way they go back and forth with the momentum. Like it's really awesome here is you get the Rock and Rolls giving the Andersons like some of their own medicine, because they kind of like isolate Ole and start working him over. So it's cool that they kind of flip the script on him and sort of start beating him at their own game, until finally the Andersons go after Ricky, just like classic Ricky Morton, looking like death as they just beat his ass. And there's maybe no team better at just like dissecting somebody than the Andersons, like to just make it look so great. And they're so methodical and like a machine. And Ricky's looking like death before they finally fire up in the closing minutes. Everybody, I'm always a big fan of when, you know, in longer matches like this, when they sell the exhaustion and it feels earned, and it definitely did in this one. And they look completely spent by this one. Like they're everybody's just sweating their ass off at the end, which I think is part of, because I want to say they might have been outside for this match because it was on the Bash Tour. I have to look it up. But anyway, the escalation of this is amazing. They just keep building and building. It never loses anything in 26 minutes or however long it is, 20-something minutes. It never feels like it's dragging or feeling like it's too long. They have incredible chemistry. Maybe some would say the finish is a bit anticlimactic because it does end up being a draw in the end. But I think it's kind of typical for, you know, these two big teams on like a Saturday night. Maybe one's not going to go over clean. But anyway, everything they did was just fantastic. I feel like watching this, it built so well as you get into the finish. And the crowd just it's hot the entire time, but they almost get hotter and hotter as it goes on. It's just, man, it's like we keep saying all this, just, and I think it makes sense on the NWA and WCW list that we do have all these tag matches, because it is so much a part of the identity of, you know, of Jim Crocker Promotions and WCW is these tag matches. And I think one thing on both our lists, and I think the list in general, like the final list, the composite list or whatever, has really done a lot of justice to, is getting, like, I think it's well represented in the list that how big tag wrestling is to the to them, like the identity of it, you know. And this is just another example of all the ones we keep going over. It's just so many great teams and so many great matches.
For sure. So I also love this match. I had it at number 57 as I watched it again for this pod. I wanted to move it up. Of course, the that's becoming a common theme, and at some point you have to be able to, be willing to move some matches down too. So, you know, there's just a lot of great matches.
Yeah.
This one finished number 89 on the total voter composite list. What I thought stood out to me in this one is how the Rock and Rolls worked a lot like the Andersons at kind of at the start. So after they'd get a little bit of shine, but then they really started working body parts, or working Ole's leg, and they were doing a lot of really kind of heelish tactics. They weren't really playing heel. They were just, you know, the what's good for the goose is good for the gander, you know, turnabout's a fair play sort of thing. So they're cutting off the ring. They are working body parts. They're making, you know, they're not really making a tag. They're doing the false tags where they, you know, slap their own hand and switch off. And they do that for a while until, you know, eventually Ricky does play Face in Peril, and they play into the angle where they broken Ricky's nose, the horse can rub it into the concrete. And that's, you know, that comes into play in a few matches on this list, and there's, you know, one to still come here. So, and obviously when the Andersons are in control, they're always working over body parts. And like you said, Ricky is just, you know, he's the best there's ever been at selling that type of beating. It's just, you know, they call it playing Ricky Morton for a reason. You know, that's, he's the best there's ever been at that. So, match was great, all the typical stuff, but I mean, I just thought that the part where the Rock and Rolls were kind of giving the Andersons a taste of their own medicine is what really put it kind of over the top for me.
Yep, agree. That was awesome. All right, keep chugging.
So we are on to my 23 then, I believe, which is the Fantastics versus the Sheepherders from the Crockett Cup 1986. So this match was a bit of a holy grail match for a time, because it Dave Meltzer had pretty famously given this 5 stars, and I don't think that it was, at least not readily available. I think it was kind of hidden for a number of years. So this match finished at number 49 on the voter list. The Fantastics get the crowd to chant USA, and then they make a point of doing the Pledge of Allegiance, because there was a fan that had the American flag in the front row, and to really show off those dastardly New Zealanders, I guess.
Fucking Kiwis. God damn.
That's right. Well, and at one point they said, God, I don't think I got the line down, but it was something about Limeys. I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure that was British people. It was a derogatory term. British people, not New Zealanders, but whatever. So the Fantastics clear the ring, and they do a Fargo strut, and then the Sheepherders do some quick tags before the Fantastics hit a bunch of, you know, drop kicks, sunset flips for their shine. And we've talked a little bit about the Fantastics and how good they are in these shine segments. So and the Sheepherders, I thought they've done more in the first 5 minutes than the Bushwhackers did in the entirety of their WWF run. So anyone that is thinking the Sheepherders and the Bushwhackers are the same, I mean, they are the same people, but they're really not the same tag team, at least looking at this match compared to their WWF work. So Fulton and one of the Sheepherders exchanged some stiff punches. And then Fulton with the drop kick outside, and all four guys are brawling. And then Fulton just gets up a bloody mess. He gets rammed into the post, I think, and he just gets up and he's bleeding buckets, and they immediately stomp him back out. And he's just from the very first, he's selling the blood loss like he's punch drunk. Tommy's like pleading his case for the ref to DQ the Sheepherders. And Fulton and the Sheepherders hit this double clothesline spot. The Sheepherders are stomping and biting the cut. They're ramming Bobby into the railing, and he's just staggering around near death all the time. But he keeps doing a really good job kind of fighting from underneath, fighting up. He does these kicks that they look like an enziguri kind of to the back of the head, but he's laying on the mat and just kind of pushing himself up and kicking whichever sheep herder is hit. I do not know which one was which, and there was no commentary on this. So, on the version I was watching anyway. So, but anyway, he keeps fighting. He gets the hot tag to Rogers, but of course the ref doesn't see it. And Jack Victory accidentally hits one of the sheep herders with the flag. He was carrying the New Zealand flag, and he hit him with a flagpole. So that draws blood, and that allows the hot tag to Tommy, who works and bites the cut on the sheep herder and hits a fist drop off the top. All four are in. Colton tumbles out and takes the ref out. There's brawling inside and out. The sheep herders hit Tommy with a flag before Bobby stops the second shot, and the Fantastics take the flag and they work over the sheep herders. There's a new ref that comes in and wakes up the original ref, who disqualifies both teams. So then they just keep brawling. I think everyone involved is bleeding, including Jack Victory. But it was kind of a wussy blade job. I never could tell for sure if he was bleeding. So there may have been one person that got out unscathed, but I thought it was a really good bloody brawl. I mentioned this at the beginning, but it probably does get a bit of a reputation bump for being this lost treasure, this hidden gem that Meltzer ranked 5 stars, but then clipped the shit in video releases before resurfacing as a hidden gem. And when it did, some kind soul then put it onto the interwebs so I could watch it even after it was cock blocked. So whoever did that, I appreciate you.
Yeah, so I had it 93. I enjoyed it okay. I guess I didn't see it as like this all-timer maybe. And I was somewhat familiar with like the Meltzer sort of reputation for it. Like, I guess I just thought it was like a good kind of bloody brawl, but it never was. it didn't strike me as anything like fantastic, pardon the pun, but yeah, I like the sheep herders and their like crazy bloodiness. I think maybe it just kind of ending in a draw, and I know it's kind of a cool chaotic finish, but yeah, I don't know, I guess it just didn't click to me as like nothing in it elevated for me, but I can see why. I mean, the blood is off the is really awesome, almost like the Jay Youngblood thing, right? So like, yeah, exactly. Four guys and one's not pulling his weight as far as the bloodshed.
That's right. Could you imagine if you were the only one, you know, at your place of employment and everybody else is cutting their heads with razor blades, how could you not join in? I mean, come on.
He probably saw the sheep herders and was like, ew, I don't want their blood to get in my wound because who knows.
That's a fair point.
Who knows what hepatitis they might have. All right, anyway, we will go now to my number 22, which is one that you had at 24, so we just spoke about it, and that would be Vader versus Flair from Starrcade 93 for the world title. So a lot of build to this match, even within the show, and it is kind of known as being a one-match show because I don't remember much else on the show being very good. They almost kind of put all their eggs in the basket of this match, which, to their credit, is an awesome match, and they do a lot of throughout the show, like building up, like it's maybe like the most face Flair thing ever, at least like before he got older, maybe, and like moving to his retirement, because it's very like about his family, interviewing his family and all that kind of stuff, like really trying to get him over as. So they try and build up the storyline of Flair as like the baby face trying to win it again. And Vader is just like the monster who's trying to crush him. And so, and that is sort of the story of the match, like, and it's just such an awesome display of like desperation by Flair through this, and that's kind of like the story of the match for me. And he just gets it across so well, like, and anytime he's able to get any kind of offense in, it's just so satisfying because you feel like he's having to fight for every single thing, because Vader is just like whipping his ass, of course, like you expect. Like, you know, it won't be the last time we talk about Vader playing a great monster, but he's playing the monster perfectly as always, just hammering Flair, knocking him down. But anytime Flair's never giving up, he kind of just keeps coming back. The blood is great because it's like Flair's mouth gets busted open, like kind of about halfway through the match. And so, he kind of has the blood in his mouth, which is like a cool visual as opposed to the blading. I think it fits, like instead of bleeding from his head, I think it almost fits the match better because it almost just looks like he got punched in the mouth, which I think fits this match very well. But eventually he hits Vader's leg into the post and starts clubbing him. Like there's points in this where it feels like a Rocky movie, like in a good way. Like, and I think thought that was one point because it's like he's finally getting like a real advantage. Like he's had a few flurries up to this point, but when he hits Vader's leg on the post, and they even say it on commentary, they feel like it's finally him kind of opening it up. Things are kind of opening up for him, and like just clubbing because you kind of tell like he takes some shots too. I mean, of course he's in there with Vader, but like there's some points, like there's that one point where they're on the mat and Vader's like punching him and he's just clubbing him in the head, which I, like I said, it's not, I mean, that's just kind of a Vader thing, but Flair gives it right back to him because this point where Flair's clubbing, like he's really laying it in. So it's awesome stuff. You get the Harley being a goober here as he does the he goes to it's probably the goofiest spot in the match. Because the match is so, like, intense. But then you get Harley. For whatever reason, he thought it would be, like, this great idea to go to the top rope. And he just kind of, like, he looks like he's, like, belly flopping into a swimming pool. When he goes to do, like, the headbutt. And he just kind of, Flair just moves. And then he headbutts Vader. Which is just, I don't know. That just cracks me up. Like, he just looks like such a goober. But anyway, the finish, I do think, it is maybe the weak point to this match. And that, like, the idea is awesome. I think it's a perfect idea for a finish. Just the execution doesn't really come off perfectly. It's basically like Flair kind of dead legs him or like chop blocks him in the back of the knee and kind of goes to do a roll up, but the roll up doesn't really hit well. Like Vader's just such a thick individual. I don't think his legs go up like a normal human being's legs would go up. And so it's kind of it's a little janky because it's almost like the ref starts counting before Flair really has him hooked or anything. And so the finish is not perfect. I mean, it's a nitpicky thing, but like I said, I think it could be even better if maybe that finish came off perfectly because the idea behind it is perfect. Like he knows he's not going to beat him with the figure four. He's too big. That's not going to work. So he's got to try and ground him. And so I thought that made sense. It just didn't. Maybe the execution wasn't perfect. But when he wins, it's a great moment. It's an excellent babyface performance. Like I said, the desperation he gets across in that match is incredible. Vader is awesome as always. It's just, it's an awesome match. It's great. It's a great moment for Flair to win. I forget what number title he's winning here. It's like number 9 or 12 or something. Who knows? But
Yeah, I don't remember which one it was. So, I feel like there was a sign in the crowd that said something about 11th, but I don't know if that was his 11th or he was going for his 11th or if the sign in the crowd was independently fact-checked or anything like that. If all his words were spelled correctly, you know, call that a win. So who knows? This finished as the number 16 match in the total poll. So, and I had it 24 and I feel a little guilty. I feel like it should. Maybe it should have been higher. I think it's just such a fantastic story. Flair's the conquering babyface, and Charlotte, the city, not his daughter, although she was shown in backstage segments along with the rest of his family. Charlotte is just with Flair 100%. So the match kind of does start slow, and Jesse keeps saying that Vader wants to beat him slowly. Like you said, you mentioned that point where Flair finally beats Vader down, and there's blood flying from his mouth. There's some on his shoulder. He's working the leg on the post. He uses a chair, works the leg some more. Vader misses a moonsault, and then you mentioned the Harley headbutt, belly flop combo, shoving the ref out. And then, yeah, I had that he won on an awkward single leg takedown, which I think is what the announcers called it. I think I would have called it. I mean, I'm sure the first time I saw it, I called it a what the fuck was that? Because it does look very awkward. So, but the thing is, this match, they would have had to go out and be downright bad for this to not be a great match and a great moment. And then they certainly weren't. They told a great story of the underdog coming, you know, fighting from underneath. Flair had maybe the best babyface comeback in this match that WCW ever had, I think, and He may have been the best babyface that WCW ever had. He just never got a really great chance to run with it. And that's something that's somewhat regrettable on WCW's history. Like I said, you know, the timing never worked that well. But and I don't think, like, from a just a technical wrestling aspect, this match is probably too high. But because of all the other stuff, maybe I have it too low. And I did bump it up, and here's why. So, like you, I believe you had mentioned you did a chronological watch. So I did a chrono watch as well. So, you know, I finally get done with the chrono watch for this project. And I've invested a lot of my time and energy, you know, as we all did. And I watched the final pay-per-view, which I believe was Greed, and then the final Nitro. And I just felt like, well, that's such a huge bummer. You know, that's, you're going out on such a down note. So I've invested all this time and I saw so much great stuff. I don't want to end it like that. So I need to watch, I need to just like pick one more match for a good feel good WCW match. And this was the one that came to my mind. So I watched it and then I bumped it up 3 or 4 places. So, and maybe should have been more. So, like, I probably should have had this above that fantastic New Sheep Herders just for that reason. But because it was that kind of inspirational story that is so WCW because it's Ric Flair too. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's the last thing I'll say about it, and especially too, if you look at the build to it, he had just come back in 93, and a lot of his 93 is not, you know, he's doing Flair for the goal. It's like a really weird year for him in WCW. So it kind of is also sort of signifying his comeback in WCW as, like, you know, as Ric Flair. Not like doing weird, like Flair for the gold, like Flair's version of like Regis and Kelly or whatever. Like, you know, it's a weird year for him early in 93. And this is kind of him later in the year, kind of getting back into his groove, kind of, which is cool too.
Yep.
All right. Speaking of Ric Flair.
Yeah. So my number 22 match is a youngster named Ric Flair against another up-and-comer named Ricky Steamboat. Maybe you've heard of these fine individuals. This was from a Landover, Maryland house show on March 18th, 1989. So this match finished number 43 in the voter list. Steamboat is a champ here. So this is between Chi-Town Rumble and Clash of the Champions 6. They also had a match in Philadelphia on the same night. And full disclosure, when I was going through my TV matches to watch, something was wrong with the video. It didn't work the first time I tried to watch it. And so I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. I'm hoping it may have resolved itself and I can still get to it. I know that match was also very highly regarded and received some votes. I think it made Chad's list. So I apologize if that's incorrect. But I know that it's pretty highly regarded. And to think that they had 2 matches on the same night or on the same day, you know, that could make a list like this is pretty amazing. They get a lot of early reversals at a quick pace, kind of like all of their other 89 stuff. And the crowd's chanting for Steamboat. So a lot of times that's not always the case. Sometimes Flair will have his fans, but in this case, Steamboat has the fans pretty early. There's a lot of chop battles and strike exchanges in the middle portion before Flair gets a figure four. He's grabbing the ropes and Hiro Matsuda's hands for extra leverage, you know, like the role model and the paragon of virtue that he is. And obviously, you know, Ric Flair, being one of the best talkers of all time, definitely needed Hiro Matsuda as his manager to, you know, give him that extra boost, I guess. I never understood that, but whatever. Flair's working the leg and Steamboat sells it like he's unable to walk. At this point, the screen on my video says that Keith Miles is to go to Guest Services Portal 3. So I guess that was on a scoreboard or something in Landover, and this was recorded from there. So, at any rate, I hope Keith reported to the correct portal. And if not, Keith, if you're listening, I hope you made it to Portal 3. If not, you should probably go there directly. So I hope everything turned out okay for you. In the meantime, Steamboat's getting a flurry with sunset flip from the outside in, and then an enziguri. And Flair tries a lot of pinfall attempts before he misses a knee drop, and Steamboat puts the figure four on. Steamboat drops 14 elbows to the knee and then puts the figure four back on. So, like, that's pretty, some pretty intense stuff that I hadn't seen yet, but we will see again in other matches that might make our list. He tries a splash, but he hits Flair's knees, and I think these two just always do a good job of selling that exhaustion of a long match without going and setting in a rest hold. So, and this is another perk of these videos that come from, I assume, some, you know, it's a handheld and it's from somebody's VHS tape. So at this point, their audio from a Washington Bullets game gets cut in. So I believe Bernard King hit a shot with 2 seconds remaining for the win. So good on them. Steamboat slams Flair off the top and he puts in the double arm chicken wing. So again, there's both callbacks and foreshadowing to other matches between these two. Flair falls back and it's a double pin. So that's yet another one that, you know, that we'll see again. So he kicks out to avoid the double pin and they do another chop battle. Flair does a Flair flip and then he runs to the other corner and I almost fell off my couch because he hits a crossbody like it's 1983 with Harley. But unfortunately, there's no Gene Kaniski to trip over, so it's not the finish. There's lots of pinfall reversals here, lots of chops. It's kind of a weird spot. A Steamboat hits a crossbody, and it looked like the ref counted three, and I have no audio, so I thought, well, I thought that Steamboat just won, but he gets up and is immediately arguing with the ref, so I guess that didn't happen. Flair didn't kick out that I noticed. He may have just raised his shoulder. But there's a hot ending sequence. Steamboat wins in 31 minutes with an inside cradle. And, you know, I think this was just a nice mix and match of a lot of things they've done in the past and future matches, but it didn't feel repetitive. So I think that the matches that these two had in 84 and then their 94 matches, they all have a little different feel. And this felt like an 89 match, but you could see parts of all those different eras in here as well, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So I would say the only reason I didn't probably rank this one is because I did not watch it when I was doing my list. It was probably just a matter of me being lazy, probably being a handheld, knowing that I already had plenty of Flair Steamboat matches that I needed to watch. So we'll blame this one on my lack of dedication. Not anything against the match itself. No downside to it. Just me not watching it. So shame on me.
You do get a chance to track it down when you're not under as much pressure and to compile a list. It would be worth doing. So
for sure. Yeah, like I said, shame on me. But all right, so we will go to my number. Let's see, my number 21. So my number 21 will be Telly versus Barry Windham from Saturday Night in January of '88. So this match, so two great guys. The whole story of it is the leg. Is Tully going after Barry's leg in the early going of the match, and then that becomes the story of the match. And it is both of them do a great job of putting their characters into this match. Tully is kind of going with the, you know, like heelish sort of tactics, but he's also just sort of a kind of played up as like the typical Tully thing. He's almost played up similar to Arn in that it's like he's this, I wouldn't say like technical marvel or anything like that, but he's just like he has that, like he's going to go after a limb or something like that. And that's what they play into. And so Barry's leg gets injured early in the match. And like the selling is fantastic in this because it's not just like I think he does, Windham does such a good job selling in this one because it's very well done in that he doesn't just like he doesn't, how do I say this? Like, it's not like he just goes 100 on the selling or zero in that he like just forgets that his leg hurts or he's like dying. He, it's like it affects him in the ways that it probably should, in that he's kind of limping around, and as long as he doesn't put weight on, he's okay. But when he goes to put weight on it, that's when he gets screwed over, which is a really cool dynamic in the match, because he is kind of more of a power guy a little bit, at least for the purposes of this match. And so when he goes to do, like, there's a few times where he keeps trying to go to, like, slam Tully, and it happens multiple times through the match, and Tully just falls on him because his leg just kind of buckles on him. And so that's what keeps happening. So he has to keep trying to overcome it. And, like, it's bothering him. And, like, he does such an awesome job with his facials and his selling of making it seem like he wants to do the thing where he's, like, he wants the adrenaline to kick in, or he wants to overcome it. Like, his mind or his heart or whatever wants to overcome it, but he just can't. Like, it just – and it, he looks pissed off about it, kind of. Like, it's just bothering him. Like, you could see it in his face that he just wants to – like, get past it and try and overcome it, but there's just nothing he can do about it. And it really makes you root for him throughout the match. Like, it's a really good kind of narrative for a babyface, because it makes you want to go after him, because you start to feel sympathy for him, because you're like, damn, this poor guy, like, he's trying to get past this whole leg thing and he can't. So it's a really cool, like, way he's selling the limb that I think is unique in this match compared to others. And so it's not just a matter of, like, well, Tully Hurt is going after his leg to put him in a submission. Like, his leg has a health bar. He's trying to work the health bar down or whatever to put him in submission. It's like he hurt his leg, and now it's effective in the ways that a hurt leg would affect you. Like, he could do other things. He just can't put weight on it. And so, in the end, he ends up winning with the lariat, which makes sense, because it's like it doesn't require him to put any weight on the leg. So he just launches at him with the lariat. Or I shouldn't say he doesn't win, because JJ, I forgot about this. So the finish, which is, again, it's awesome because he's done such a good job as a babyface that when JJ, like, interferes at the end and kind of screws him over, you're just like, JJ, you piece of shit. Like, Barry's been fighting this whole match trying to overcome this damn leg, and then you come in here and cheat. And so it's just great storytelling throughout the entire match. Tully's awesome, as always. Like I said, he does all these heel moves in the early going that kind of gets in advance. Like, leading up to, just to backtrack a little bit, he kind of, in the early going, Barry's kind of got the upper hand on him, and then Tully just kind of keeps grinding at him until he finally finds its end and goes after the leg, and that kind of leads to everything else. So it's just excellent storytelling, and that's what I love so much, and why I have this one so high. It's just, I love the storytelling in the match. It's just fantastic to have this great babyface performance, and then finally the heel, you know, JJ gets involved, and it's like, he's just a fucking piece of shit, and you're so angry that he interfered and screwed this guy over. It's just awesome stuff all around. I love this match so much. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely hit the nail on the head with the story of this match and you know, what they do within it. So this match finished number 97 on the total voter list. Let's see, I had it at 72, and again, it's another one of those that I regret a little bit being that low. But again, there's so many matches, it's hard to take anything down. And in fairness, it's kind of a, I don't know if it was a hidden gem. I think that in a lot of corners, people were aware of it. People knew it was a great match, but it wasn't lauded like, you know, the Flair Steamboat Trilogy or, you know, some of the matches that we still have to talk about, you know, that we're kind of no doubters. This is, you know, a TV match, wasn't as high profile. So, you know, I'm happy it made the top 100. So, you know, I just had, there was a great, another great TV match from the 80s, JCP. And just the fact that these two are able to tell the story where, like you said, you're sympathetic to Barry. He's a big guy. And Tully's just the vile bastard, and he's not a big guy, and he's so good at being a heel, and Barry is great at being a babyface. Barry's great at being a heel, too. He's, if there's anything that Barry is not great at, it has to do with professional wrestling. I'm not sure I could name it, but you know, the same thing stood out to me that stood out to you, that just the selling the leg and how he did it. So realistically, he didn't, you know, he didn't wait till it got attacked again, and then he'd act like he was dying again. I've been shot. I'll do my move. Now I've been shot again. It was, it actually stopped him, right, from executing his moves. And like you said, it was multiple times that leg gave out. So, and, you know, you talked about the little BS finish with Dylan getting involved. He's, you know, and it was also significant because Luger runs out and tells Tommy Young to check the replay. And I did feel like they just took forever doing that. And, you know, they restart the match just in time for Tully to attack again. And, you know, Luger's there to stop the count. The Horsemen, they attack Luger and they offer Wyndham membership. And he turns him down and gets beaten down. Sting makes the save. And then Luger and Wyndham agree to form a tag team after the match. So this is kind of the start, or maybe it's like step two. You know, it's one of the early stages of the angle that we've seen throughout so many matches on this list of Barry's fighting the Horsemen. He's fighting them. He's gallantly battling, and he wins some and he loses some, but he can never quite get any momentum to get over that hump. And then he finally does turn, and then he joins them and has more great matches. So I kind of appreciate it more as I see, as you know, the different puzzle pieces mm-hmm. fit together. The entire picture. Now, every one of those puzzle pieces on their own are fantastic, and I watch and love some matches like the Clash 1 match or that main event match without being able to see the entire picture, and I think they work wonderfully. But then when you see it all, then it's even greater appreciation, and it really makes you long for some type of a promotion like this. Like, and WCW gets a lot of shit for their later days, but when Jim Crockett Promotions or WCW was working on this level, man, they had some good stuff.
Yeah, but you could see just how many matches we have in this upper part of the list that are all, you hear the same years coming up, like 89, 88, like, you know, and like matches like this is on TV.
Right.
Back when TV wasn't, you know, the main thing that they were really focused on too, you know, it wasn't like their focus to try and put their best stuff on TV. So the fact that this kind of got thrown out, and like you said, that it was a great match, but it also was just part of the, it was just a cog in the storyline, is really cool.
Yep. All right. Are we at my number 21? Is that where we're at? Okay. So I will finish this up with my number 21, which is Rick Rude versus Ricky Steamboat. The Iron Man match from Beach Blast 1992. I believe you have that one higher on your list, Jake.
Yes, I do have that one higher. So I guess that will...
Yeah, we will talk about that on another night then.
Yeah. And that will leave us at number 20, which would be our stopping point for this episode. We have talked through quite a few matches on this one. This has been one of our longer ones, just the way it tends to, the way the dice roll on these, how it kind of shakes out.
Yes, indeed. But we covered a lot of great matches. There was a definite thread of a lot of the tag teams, a lot of the great tag team matches. Like you said, that's really reflective of what WCW was. And I think that shows because they put a little bit of a priority on it. They gave them some time. They had good established characters. So that stands to reason. So, speaking of good established characters, Jake, do you have anything that you'd like to plug from any of your wide variety, myriad of podcasts that you're involved in?
Yeah, so I think if you've been listening to these, you kind of have an idea of stuff I'm on. But the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast on the North-South Connection feed, I'm getting now into the fallout for SummerSlam 2002. Triple H, on the latest episode, I covered Triple H getting the big gold belt. Speaking of WCW, getting gifted the big gold belt. So a very controversial moment in WWE's history. You can find me on Highway to the Impact Zone. Maybe not by the time this comes out, but pretty soon we'll be covering, oh my goodness, why can't I think of it? Final Resolution, I believe, 2005. So check that out. And we also just dropped a new PTB NXT. We covered TakeOver Fatal 4-Way. So we're up to another TakeOver in that timeline. So fun stuff.
Very good. I would just encourage anyone to join the discussion on the next stretch project, which is the greatest WCW wrestler ever. So if you participated in this project, ranking the matches, you've got a great head start. And if you didn't, then this is a pretty easy entry, I think, for this next project. So there's a Facebook page. We'd love to have you in the discussion and love to have you participate. And I'd give a thank you to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, where you can find this podcast and a host of other great podcasts by a lot of talented people. So I enjoy it greatly and encourage you to do the same. So with that, I'm Tyler, and here with Jake. We are out, and we will see you soon for the next round of greatest WCW matches. Peace.
See you later, you egg-sucking dogs. You're like a dream come true. Just wanna be with you. Three girls is plain to see. Then you're the only one for me. And four repeat steps, one through three. I make you fall in love with me. Start back at one. Yeah, yeah. So incredible the way things work themselves out. And all emotional once you know.